There's no business like show business.
All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new one of these is posted up at WGNplus.com. And of course, don't forget my official landing page, which can be reached through WGNplus.com in the entertainment section. Got a little prompt there that says Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic, and all previous episodes are there for your binging or snacking pleasure, whatever your appetite may be, as you click on or stream or, I don't know, whatever. What else? What else do they do, Kevin? How else do you find these things?
Stitcher, there's an app.
What is that? Whoa.
Stitcher?
Stitcher.
Stitcher.
What is Stitcher?
It's like a podcast hosting service.
Really?
Yeah, there's all sorts of them, yeah.
So
the Yak Channel, I think, is one of them.
Oh, so we're on Stitcher.
To my knowledge.
You know, when they started this whole venture, they never thought they would get on Stitcher. They were like, yeah, I mean, we have our hopes.
Looks like we made it.
But we'll never get on Stitcher. And what's the other one you said? Yak?
Yak Channel? Maybe, I don't know.
Wow. There's so many. Is it on the Apple thing? The TuneIn?
TuneIn app, yeah.
TuneIn app?
I'm not sure if it's on iTunes or not. I think so.
No?
Maybe. I could check.
Yeah, I don't know. People can find it, I think. I get a Google alert on my email when it's posted. So somebody's... it's out there somewhere, the ability to listen to it. So we thank you for whatever means of connection that you are using. We thank you for clicking on. In fact, a few podcasts ago, I think the last one, it was Memorial Day, and so it was not up on Monday. It went up on Tuesday, and it was very nice. There were several people emailed me. Where's the piano? There was this fright in their messages. I don't like the sound of this. Where's your podcast? So I had to calm them down and say, don't worry, it's just Memorial Day or Labor Day. I keep saying Memorial Day all the time. It's Labor Day, and apparently Kevin doesn't know the meaning of Labor Day because he took off.
That is the meaning of Labor Day.
Yeah, work.
No, to not
work. No, work. Labor.
I had to work an overnight before that, too. I was laboring.
Oh boy. Anywho, so that's the thing. And we are at episode 69. I won't even make the bad joke because it's too easy and yet still funny, regardless. So, what's been going on in my week? Later on, we're going to talk to Emily Armonetti in the Pop Culture Club, and we're going to talk about a couple of things concerning TV. Not only these, seems the new schedule, which now is officially starting. I saw the first episode of the new version of American Horror Story, so that must mean that the new TV season is upon us. Most of the shows don't premiere until the end of the month, but a few start to scatter through the first couple of weeks of September, but then really toward the end of September is when all the major shows start to premiere, whether they are returning shows or premiere shows, new shows. And I do want to talk about, I have to laugh. So with Kevin, the producer here, we were talking about how he a lot of times, you know, even though he's a fan of many TV shows, he, like many of his ilk, meaning the millennials, they don't really watch shows when they air. Those of us who are used to watching shows when they air, like you used to do on television because you had no choice, we watch shows when they're actually on. Well, I was talking to Emily, who's on the Pop Culture Club, and I said, well, so did you see the finale of Twin Peaks? Because the 18-hour run of Twin Peaks finally ended. And so I asked her if she saw it. And she said, no, I didn't see it. And then she said, but isn't there a 10-day grace period between when a show airs and when you watch it? And I said, no, there is not a 10-day grace period. The 10-day grace period of watching a show was created by our slacker producer, Kevin, who can't watch a show when it airs. So he said, well, don't you have at least 10 days?
That's like in the Constitution or
something. Yeah, well, we have a new amendment. I'm drafting it. I'm making an executive order. Heck with the legislature. That's the way we do things now. So I said, no. Emily said, well, I didn't watch the Twin Peaks finale, but isn't there a 10-day grace period? I said, no, there's not a 10-day. That's Kevin's rule, and I don't have any 10-day grace periods. I have 10-minute grace periods. You have to watch it within the last 10 minutes of when it airs. That's what I do. So in fairness to Emily, because as we tape these shows, and this is ridiculous, because I tape this on Wednesday, and then it's posted the next Monday, but I tape it on Wednesday. The last Twin Peaks aired on Sunday, 3 days ago, 3.5 days ago. In fact, I'm in the hallway here just before we do the recording, and I will say supposed Twin Peaks fan Amy Guth is in the hallway. She records her podcast right before mine. And so I say, hey, how about it? Did you see the finale? She goes, no. Don't tell me. Didn't see it yet. I was waiting all week for that. I don't understand that, but, you know, what can I say? I would urge you also, when I always talk about the... In my day, but I have to urge you to please go to my Facebook page, which is Jim Toronto or Elton Jim, because I found a photo of me. I probably was either 18 or 19, maybe 18, 19, maybe 20. So this picture is over 30 years old of me with a beard, with a full grown beard, like when I was 18 or 19 years old. As I said before, I grew a full beard when I was a freshman in college. I mean, a freshman in high school. Over spring break. So that's like 14 or 15. So by 18, believe me, I was growing beards with no problem. But I found this picture, and it was funny, so I put it on my Facebook page, and I said, so to all you millennials with your hipster beards, here's one from 30 years ago. So been there, done that. Let's move on. I had this beard before you were born, Kevin.
I still can't grow one very well.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, would you if you could?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I mean, there's not even, listen to that.
My
yes.
wife would hate it, but yeah.
Oh, really? Your wife would hate it?
She gets fussy when I'm like this.
Oh, really? Even with the scruff?
Just a little bit of scruff.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
She's not into the millennial beard.
Not really.
Oh. So maybe your lack of masculinity and your lack of testosterone is what allowed you to get married.
Yeah, actually, that makes a lot of sense now.
Oh, we kid Kevin because, it's easy. But anyway, so we will talk about the Twin Peaks thing without ruining the ending. Ruining the ending. Unbelievable. Although, I got news for you. If you didn't see it, I can't ruin the ending when there isn't an ending. So that's all I'll say on that. Before we get a little more involved. So, what's going on in my world? In my world, the last couple of weeks has been, not dominated, but certainly has been, shall I say, consumed. Well, not consumed. Preoccupied might be a good word. Everybody, if you listen to me with any kind of regularity, not only is my nickname Elton Jim, and yes, I am a huge Elton John fan, but... I'm also a big Bruce Springsteen fan, and so I don't know if you've seen, but probably one of the hottest tickets in the history of Broadway have just gone on sale over the last couple of weeks. Bruce Springsteen is doing a one-man show at the Walter Kerr Theater on Broadway, beginning in October and now running through February, and who knows, they may extend the run. I mean... you know, what was that phrase when Cats played? Cats Forever? I mean, it was there for 20 years, I think. So who knows? Maybe this is, maybe Bruce is just done with all the big E Street Band tours. He's just going to play Broadway for the next 20 years until he's 95. But anyway, so right now it goes until February, I think February 3rd, beginning of February. So a couple, 3 months or 4 months of shows, and 5-6 shows a week, just like you would on a Broadway run. So obviously, to any Bruce Springsteen fan worth his or her salt, this is a must-see. The opportunity to see Bruce Springsteen in a 960-seat venue, which is crazy. I don't think he's appeared in a 900-seater in, I think he even said, in 40 years. So to see him perform in a small venue like that is an amazing opportunity to see any major performer in such an intimate space, when most of them play arenas that vary from 15,000 to 100,000. To be able to be that close and that intimate is something. And Bruce Springsteen is known for his intimacy as it is, and somehow making a huge venue feel like a 900-seater. So I can only imagine what a 900-seater is going to feel like. It's going to feel like he's in your living room. And it's a one-man acoustic show from what they've said. It's been somewhat hush-hush. I don't know how much. Maybe Bruce even himself doesn't even know what this show is going to be like. Although, as we sit here in early September, he's got less than a month. So I hope he's at least putting something together. Because there's a lot of anticipation for this, obviously. And so the ticket demand, I mean, a ticket demand for a Bruce Springsteen tour is ridiculous anyway. He is one of the most acts that is the most in demand. And so his tickets are sold on, the secondary market through brokers and other means. It's legendary how much money the secondary markets make off of Bruce Springsteen, and many technologies and many strategies have been implemented to thwart that secondary market, whether it's, new technologies or different processes with IDs and bracelets and retinal exams and blood tests. I mean, you name it. They have tried to stop that. I don't think it's possible to do that. It just seems as if that's part of human nature, I think, from caveman days. You know, when the first caveman, killed the first buffalo and he was eating it with his family, and there was some left over, I think there was another tribe of cavemen that said, "Wow, I'd love to see some of that." And I think the first guy said, "Okay, I'll sell it to you for, five neck bones around your necklace," or whatever a caveman thought. My point is, there has been a secondary market for things in demand since the beginning of time. I mean, go back to the Garden of Eden, right? What do you think original sin was? That snake says to Eve, "Hey, want an apple? Sure, I'll take an apple. How much? Well, it's only going to be the price of original sin. Well, I'll pay that. I want that apple." So the Springsteen folk and the legitimate ticket people have always been trying to stop the Springsteen secondary market. But so now the latest is something called the Ticketmaster, who is selling the tickets to this, the Ticketmaster verified fan process, of which the only way you could possibly even hope to get a ticket, supposedly, without the secondary market, which they were hoping to thwart, was through something called the verified fan process, which is another new scheme here and a deeper kind of technology to keep these bots from buying tickets or from getting the brokers to getting their hands on these, which are already I would say, the hottest ticket in the history of Broadway. I don't have any confirmation on that, but I think it's without a doubt. So to do this, you have to go on. You open up a Ticketmaster account if you don't already have one, and you go on, and then you submit your name, and then they go through some kind of electronic as well as almost like a background check. They're like vetting you. And they verify that you are a real person and you are not some technology bot that will just go on and corrupt the system and get through. And then I actually believe, which I thought was a very interesting side note, which I did not know initially, that they will even go through your own history and make sure that you're real. They will check up on different ways to see if you are both real. And I don't know if you're both a fan or, you know, how big of a Ticketmaster, customer you are. I don't know what goes on in that, but it felt a little big brotherish to me. But anyway, this is the new plan. So the night before the tickets went on sale, I believe it was on August 30th, I received an email that said I was on standby. So now here's the deal. With this verified fan, the whole idea is that if you made it through the vetting, then you would receive a code via a text or an email the night before the tickets went on sale. And then all that code allowed you to do was get into the system to buy a ticket when they went on sale. So like you would automatically, when a regular concert goes on sale, they say tickets go on sale at 10 o'clock and you log on and you hopefully get through. Well, with this, there's no such thing. You could not, if you did not have a code, you couldn't even get into the system to see if there were any tickets left. So the code just allowed you access. But then you still had to keep your fingers crossed that by the time you got through with everyone else who got this code, that there were any tickets left. And we know historically how fast tickets go anyway. And 900 tickets per show in today's electronic world are going to go in 2 seconds. Even though everybody, if you had this code, you were limited to 2 tickets per show. If you can get through to any shows. And yeah, and then good luck with saying, oh, I want to go on the 12th. Yeah, right. I mean, it's like, I just want to get a ticket. So I got a standby notification. So at the time, I didn't know what that meant. Sort of felt like I was being waitlisted for college. Or I was sitting there in an airport lounge waiting to see if I can get on a plane. And we all know how that goes. So I didn't know if this was valid or not. They said, so you're on standby, and if any additional codes become available, then you will be on a list to get that. So needless to say, the tickets went on sale, and they were sold out in record time, and I never got a code. And then I found out that it sounds like the majority of the world got this same standby notification, so I'm not sure who got through. But the funny thing was, the shows went on sale in 2 seconds. I mean, and were sold out in 2 seconds. But within, I believe, 20 minutes or so, there were already tickets on StubHub available. And guess how much the price was for one ticket? $6,000. For one ticket for a 2-hour show, $6,000. That's a cruise. Let's see. Should I go on a cruise? Should I buy a car? Or should I go to a 2-hour Bruce Springsteen concert? Now, I'm not sure if anybody bought those tickets. You could put anything up on StubHub for any price you want. That doesn't mean someone's going to pay for it. But once again, that was indicative of how hot and in demand these tickets were. So not surprisingly, the next day they announced that they would extend the run. It was first going to go through the end of November, and they extended the run through February. And they said, so good news, Bruce Springsteen fans who want to go to see Bruce on Broadway. You have another chance, Another month and a half of tickets are available. But then here's the part that I didn't like. They said, if you registered the first time through, no need to register again. You're in the system. You're verified. Okay, very good. But then they said, if you haven't registered, you have another week to register. Well, wait a minute. Yes, you've added more shows, but now you're opening the pool up again. That's not fair. The whole idea is to let the people who want those tickets to get access. That's why you're adding new shows. Well, what good is it if you add new shows, but then you're adding more people to the pool who can get it? That's like saying, okay, we're selling Powerball, and then you bought your ticket, and then they said, oh, by the way, we just decided we're going to add 5 more Powerballs to the thing. Well, wait a minute. I bought a ticket when it was only 1 through 54. And now you're saying it could be 1 through 60. So now my chances have gone down. You've worsened my chances. So the Springsteen people here say, hey, good news. Extended run. Month and a half of more shows. So you say, great. But then they open up to more people who say, well, geez, let me just throw my name in there. They might not even be fans. The true fans are the ones who were verified for that first group of tickets that went on sale. So you don't open that up. Sorry. You should have done it. You had 3 weeks to do it or a month to do it before. So that was very disappointing. So as you record this, I am expecting tonight to get an email. Whether I'm on standby again or who knows, I might not even get an email. And I probably will not get the code. And even if I got the code, I'm sure I will not even get a ticket. So I don't know. It's very disappointing. Hopefully, what I would hope is, you know, Bruce, just as I said, what's the difference? Play there for a year. Take a month off and do a month and a half of shows and then take another month off. That's how Broadway works anyway. There is clearly a huge demand. And this is not even in this country. This is all over the world. People are looking all over the world to fly in for this show. And yes, he could take this the structure of this show and go to different cities with it and play smaller theaters. He can come to Chicago and maybe play the Chicago Theater or maybe the Rosemont Theater. But there is a mystique to Broadway. That's what makes this special. Springsteen fans will go see this show anywhere he performs it. But to see him on Broadway, that's cool. There's just a mystique to that. You know, aside from the intimacy of the venue, it's Broadway. It's Springsteen on Broadway. Just online, they've shown the posters and things at the theater, and it just looks cool. Springsteen on Broadway. So I have no idea. I doubt if, unfortunately, I'm going to be able to get in there. I don't know, because, I mean, they're saying that if you get a ticket, you need ID. So I don't know how you'd get in, even if you were able to get a ticket on the street somewhere. I don't know how you'd get in. So who knows? I mean, I'm going to give it a shot. But I would hope that they just continue to extend this. As I said, that's what Broadway is. Phantom of the Opera is still playing on Broadway. It opened in the 80s. You know, Cats played for an extended run for 20 some years. So Bruce, you are in great demand. It would be easy for him. He lives in New Jersey. Who at his age, who needs all the packing up? You can drive in every night, do a 2-hour show, and go home. Do that for a year and allow as many people as want to see you in that venue on Broadway see it. Don't make it such that it's just this lucky few, and you know that it's going to be mostly tickets that people get from somewhere. Half the people going to those shows are probably not even going to be real Bruce Springsteen fans. So do yourself a favor and do your fans a favor and extend this thing and just say, you know what, for the next year, look at like Hamilton. Every couple of months, they release another block of 3 or 4 months tickets. I hope that's the plan here. Yeah, I'd like to see Bruce at the Chicago Theater. It's better than seeing him at a 15,000-seat arena. But if I had my druthers, if I had my real choice, I'd rather see him on Broadway than at the Chicago Theater. Just, it's Broadway. That's the mystique of it. So I'm going to keep my fingers crossed and we'll see what happens. But the other side of the coin is there has been great mystery about, so what is this show going to be? I mean, these tickets went on sale with just three words. Springsteen on Broadway. That was enough to sell out in 45 seconds. People didn't know what this was. There were rumors it was going to be a whole band show, although I knew it wouldn't be. It didn't make any sense. He'd blow the roof off if he brought the whole E Street Band into a 900-seat place. Plus, it made more sense that it would be a solo one-man show, probably acoustic with a guitar and a piano. And, you know, he just had this very successful autobiography that was released last year. And so he probably, all indications are that it's going to be kind of some readings from the book and maybe some stories about it and how those will be embellished, maybe with some visuals and, you know, just Bruce playing acoustic. So yeah, that's a special thing. You never get to see him in that intimate of a space and performing in that intimate of a way. So that is what is special. At least that's what they're saying it will be. But I don't know. It seems to me that Bruce Springsteen has always tried a lot of different things. At the end of the day, he certainly is a showman. There's no doubt about that. And there is kind of an interesting thing about this. You know, Springsteen on Broadway. I mean, there was, you know, John Barrymore and Marlon Brando. And now Bruce Springsteen. How does that fit? So, yeah, I mean, you know, it makes sense that he would play his music and do this one-man show. But I wonder, wouldn't it be interesting if he's been known to throw curveballs at people. I mean, he put out Born in the USA, which was a 14 million copy selling album in 1984. And then his next album was a very sparse album that did not really feature the E Street Band in any big way. There were very small personal songs called Tunnel of Love. Everybody's like, whoa, what's this? He followed up The River, which was his breakthrough in 1980, with Nebraska, which was a purely homemade album, literally homemade in his home with just his guitar and a harmonica. And that blew everybody away. Like, wow, everybody was expecting the next album to be huge. And he came out with this very dark and very sparse acoustic album called Nebraska, which is one of his best. But my point is, he always confounds. He doesn't follow the normal path, which is what makes him an interesting artist. So I'm wondering, how great would it be if he walks out on stage at the Walter Kerr Theater on Broadway, and don't forget, it's Bruce on Broadway, right? And he walks out on the Broadway stage where some of the greatest legends of Broadway have performed. And wouldn't it be great if he goes, a 1, 2, a 1, 2, 3, 4. Well, hello, Dolly. Yes, hello, Dolly. It's so nice to have you back where you belong. I would love if Bruce came out. How great would that be? If he just started to sing Broadway songs. Bruce on Broadway. Hey, that's what it says, gang. So he comes out, and all of a sudden, the lights get dim, and he pulls out his acoustic guitar, and everything gets very, very solemn and very stark. And he goes, that old man river, that old man river, he must know something. He don't say nothing, that old man river. Just keeps rolling, rolling along. He don't plant no taters. He don't plant no cotton. And them damn plants is not soon forgotten. But that old man river just keeps rolling along. Everybody sits there in shock, like at the producers, with their mouth open. And then all of a sudden, you know, Bruce is known for telling stories before his concerts, you know, before his songs. So all of a sudden, what if he pulled out this nugget from the Broadway canon? You know, dear God, you have made many, many poor people. Now, I realize that it's no shame to be poor. But it's no great honor either, man. So would it have been so terrible if I had a small fortune? If I was a rich man, diddle-deedle-deedle-deedle-deedle-deedle-deedle-dum. All day long I diddle-deedle-dum. If I was a wealthy man, how great would that be? Or, don't cry for me, Argentina. You were supposed to be immortal. That would be his Seeger Sessions take on that. Although my best would be, I think, if, you know, once again, he likes to introduce songs. So he's like, so one day I was out in New Jersey, and so I was with Miami Steve and with Clarence and with Max Weinberg and Professor Roy Bittan in the E Street Band, and we was walking on the boardwalk in New Jersey, and we saw a light. There was a light in the Stone Pony Theater. In the club where we used to play on the Jersey Shore back in the 60s and the 70s. And so we walked by and we heard some music, and but the place was closed and we didn't understand what was going on in there. And I said, Clarence, do you hear anything? And he said, yeah. He goes, you know, you heard about the Phantom of the Stone Pony, didn't you? And I said, what? He said, yeah, there's a story that there's a phantom that lives way in the bowels of the Stone Pony in New Jersey, and he plays music sometimes when the club's closed, and so maybe that's him. And I was like, well, I never heard of that story, but I'd certainly like to meet him. And so me and Clarence and Miami Steve, we busted through a basement window, and we went down some stairs, and there was this lake. And we thought it was a lake. It was probably the sewer. But there was a lake underneath the Stone Pony, and we sort of walked through it. We waded through it, and we heard in the distance, we heard this music, and it was kind of like an organ music. And then we just heard a guy singing, and we looked at one another, and we just stopped and we listened, and this is what we heard. Nighttime sharpens, heightens each sensation. Darkness stirs, wakes imagination. Slowly, gently, night unfurls a splendor. Grasp it. Sense it, tremulous and tender. Turn your faith away from the garish light of day to the songs that the music that I write. Help me make the music of the night. That's what I think that show's going to be like. I don't think Bruce Springsteen is going to sing his own music. I don't think he's going to read from his book. I think Bruce is going to sing Tomorrow from Annie. And there's no business like show business from Annie Get Your Gun. And then I think he's going to sing The Impossible Dream from Man of La Mancha. He's going to blow everybody away. He's going to say, I told you, it's Bruce on Broadway. What did you expect? And we're back here at Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Every week we do this stuff, whatever it is. Hello, cheeky monkeys! We got a little cheeky monkey on the phone right now to go into the Pop Culture Club. It's... It's Emily Arminetti. How are you doing, Emily?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
So, for those who don't understand why I'm playing this Boy George song, explain to them why I'm playing this underneath this segment.
Well, this is Karma Chameleon.
Yeah.
By the Culture Club.
Yeah.
And... we are now
entering
the Pop Culture Club segment.
Right. So it's pop culture.
It's pop culture.
And then it's the Culture Club.
Right.
Culture Get it? Club. Pop Culture Club. See, that's how
I
it works.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, you see
I
that?
I see what you did there.
Yeah, see? it's been over a year or so that I'm doing this, and I still believe that I need to explain that.
Yeah.
Unless people... now, what gets me is I don't know how well you actually knew it, and you're a charter member, so that...
Of course I know.
Oh,
you sounded
a little shaky. You didn't sound as confident as I thought you would.
No, I'm confident. It's more that I am still wondering why we have to explain this. It's pretty obvious.
Well, you never know.
But speaking of my anniversary, I have to say thank you again for the flowers.
Oh, yes. Yes, I threatened at the last podcast to send you some flowers because it has been the year anniversary that you have been joining me here on the podcast for the Pop Culture Club. And I certainly wanted to commemorate that and thank you for all your time and effort and talents and interesting insights and funny little stories. And so I was happy to do that, and I wanted to do that. And so they got there the next day, right, or a couple days later?
No, they got there, I think, on the 31st, right?
And little did I know.
It was Thursday.
Yeah.
And the doorbell rang.
Uh-huh.
You just had the conversation the day before, and I took it as a joke. You're like, maybe I'll send you flowers. Maybe I won't. I don't know. And I went, ha, 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 ha. And then I totally forgot about it.
Oh, you did? Well, that's good. So you did forget about it.
Well, I didn't think you were serious. And then the doorbell rang, and I was like, oh, who could this be? And it's a guy standing there with just these beautiful flowers in my favorite color.
Which is yellow.
But so then I thought, and it still didn't ring a bell, and I thought, oh, because my husband went away for the weekend to see Notre Dame play.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, oh, he's trying to, like, you know,
make
up for, like, any time he wants to go. Well, I don't get upset. But he's kind of smart enough to try to, like, lay the groundwork for next time. You know? So I thought, maybe he sent these as like, thanks for letting me, you know.
Right.
Thanks for holding down the fort for the weekend.
Right, because you have two children.
And so I brought them in. Yeah, I have two children, you know. It's a lot of work for, like, 2 days to hold down the fort. And especially because he's standing around at a tailgate getting drunk, you know, passing out in a parking lot.
Well, that's nice to know that. It's nice to know that the father of two children is at a tailgate passing out drunk. Very nice.
I'm kidding. Now he's going to get mad when he hears.
Should I call family services?
It's like how you think that I pass out in the lawn at Ravinia. It doesn't really happen, but I like to humor you and make you think of that.
With your sundress
anyway.
And your selfie sticks.
Yeah, right. So I bring them in. Well, lo and behold, they're not actually from him. So now he's in trouble.
Right, because look at that.
You know,
somebody else sent you some flowers.
Right. So he'll be thanking you for that.
Oh, I didn't know I was going to get in trouble with him now by doing that.
No, and I opened the card. No, you're not really going to get in trouble with him, but you did get him in trouble with me.
Yeah, right.
For no reason. He didn't even do anything to get in trouble.
Right.
But I opened up the card, and it was such a nice, pleasant surprise. It said, happy podcast anniversary.
Right. Podcastly yeah. yours.
Right, exactly.
Well, I'm glad you liked them. Now, did they come? Because, you know, a lot of times you order these online and, you know, they don't always, they try to, because they usually use a local florist.
Yeah.
And so they try to recreate the floral arrangement that the company shows on the website, but sometimes they don't perfectly do it. So,
well, this is why every Mother's Day my mom sends me a photo of what she received so that I can look at it and verify whether they've done a good job or not.
So now, did that come in a smiley cup?
It did.
Oh, it did. Good, because that was the whole idea. It came one of those great little like yellow smiley, you know, the smiley face. And I was hoping and wondering if that, you know, the place, I'm sure they used a place in Texas where you live, that they would have the smiley cup. Because sometimes they give you a different kind of vase, you know.
Like maybe it would just be like a plain yellow cup.
Yeah, that would match the flowers, but not have the smiley, because I wanted the smiley cup.
Yeah, no, they came through. In fact, just this morning, my daughter was pointing it out to me. She's like, it has smiley face.
Nice.
And I was like, yes, it does. Yeah.
Nice. So now, now you have a nice little smiley face cup or mug for, you know, that you can display.
Right. I can drink my soy latte out of it every morning.
Oh, God, soy latte. Would you just get some friggin' milk from a cow? Jesus.
But you will be happy to know that the flowers today still look really good.
Nice. That's almost a week.
Like they did when they arrived.
Great.
They did a really good job.
Nice. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that, because so often, like your mom was thinking, you know, you order these things and you just hope that they not only, you know, recreate the one that you ordered, but that they're quality flowers and that the arrangement is done nice. So I'm glad that it worked out. And once again, I just wanted to show you my appreciation. I would have loved to have shown you my appreciation in person and, you know, given you flowers or taken you out to eat and spend some time. But obviously, when you came into Chicago 2 weekends in a row, you found no time for me. So thank you.
Well, no, I did say, hey, do you want to have lunch on Saturday?
Yeah, you asked me that. You asked me that on a Thursday.
No.
Yes. You said, oh, what
and
about?
That was after I told you 3 weeks prior that I would be in Chicago.
Not that week before. Not that you told me you were going to come to see.
You can spin this any way you want.
You told me that you were coming for John Mellencamp. You did not tell me you were coming in the week before. No way.
Yes, I did tell you.
No.
Well, we'll review the podcast episode. See, this is the great thing about the podcast.
Yeah.
It's all on record.
No, you kept saying you were coming in on August 26th to see John Mellencamp at Ravinia. And that was all you said.
Just selective listening.
No, you got selective
memory.
I told you
I'd be there twice in August.
Twice.
Like I said, you know what? Oh. This is who I think we should be the official judge of this.
It doesn't matter. It's
James is very, as our number one fan, James is very familiar with the podcast.
Your son. She's
but
talking about her son.
Even one day in the car, my son James, in the car not that long ago, it was a few weeks ago, he was talking about he had missed the episode because we weren't in town on the Monday, and I said, oh yeah, you know, yeah, we'll listen to it. And he goes, yeah, no, that's episode 62 or whatever episode. Like, he knows what episode he's waiting for.
Oh, I
so
love him.
I think he is well positioned to be the judge of this. He will go back, he will review the episode in question.
Oh, that is too funny.
And he'll make a determination. He'll be like, just like Judge Wapner.
Well, I'm very happy because obviously, as I said, I've known Emily for about, the scary part is it's probably almost been 20 years since we've known one another. Now.
Yeah.
Almost. And so I was very touched when she had her son. How old is your son?
7.
Yeah, I was very touched 7 years ago when she named him after me. So once again, thank you for that.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the least I could do.
Yeah, the delusion continues. So, So I'm glad you got those, and happy anniversary, and everything's great. And I even, going through, I was telling you I was going through my summer of decluttering, and I went through a lot of my mom's old stuff, which I kept. Well, a lot of stuff I threw away, obviously, many years. But one of the things I kept was she had three, and these are from the 70s, these are the originals, three of those smiley mugs.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, so I've got one in my kitchen. On the refrigerator, and so
now
that,
I have one.
Yeah, so now you have one too. So that's good. So here's
someday when James is decluttering my house,
right.
I'll take that and he'll put it on top of his refrigerator.
There you go. Put it on the bottom where you got it at least. You know, in fact, that's the one thing. Like you think about this stuff. You know, at the time you say, "Oh, you know," once you get something, you know, you say, "Oh, I'll always remember this." And then as time goes on, you forget things. So, my wife and I travel quite a bit, and I got into the about 3 or 4 years ago. I got into the habit. We went to South Dakota to see, or is it North Dakota? Where's Mount Rushmore? North Dakota. Right? I think it's in North Dakota.
This is stretching my geography.
And I went there.
I have to say, though, but my husband thinks I'm really weird for this, but Mount Rushmore is like on my bucket list.
Oh, you got to go.
I'm fascinated by it.
It's the coolest thing on earth. I mean, it's in South Dakota. I figured it was South Dakota. It's near Rapid City, South Dakota. It's the coolest thing. And you know, I mean, it's difficult because you could spend maybe an hour or two there. It's not a lot to do there, but it is so majestic and so cool. And when you see it in the context of how it was, you know, literally it's sitting in, you know, just carved in these mountains. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
cool. So you've
seen Stonehenge where you're just driving along. There's nothing there. And then all of a sudden, bam.
Yeah. How cool is that? Yeah. Stonehenge is great as well. Yeah. So, yeah, you got to see that. You got to take the kids and you got to see that. You really do. And that's how I felt. I really want to see Mount Rushmore. So when we went to Mount Rushmore, then not far from there is that Crazy Horse Monument, which they've been trying to make for the last 40 or 50 years to celebrate American Indian, Native American culture. And there's this Crazy Horse that they've only, but they, it's, you know, it's one of these things that they've been raising money for 40 or 50 years. And they've got basically the nose and the brow of his. I mean, it's supposed to be this huge thing that is not far from Mount Rushmore, you know, once again, because a lot of Native Americans were very anti Mount Rushmore because they felt that that was not right to carve that into the mountains.
Right.
And so then another sculptor said, well, to give them their credit, I'm going to do this Crazy Horse Monument. In another mountain, and but it really has been it's been slowed many, many years. It's still, so you could still, they're still blasting. I mean, you could still see it. The progress has been very, very slow. But so you go there, and they actually had a big pile of rocks that you could just take from the blasting, you know?
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to take a rock, right? So I take a rock, and we have a little patio in our backyard, you know, with all the landscaping. So I said, oh, this will be cool. We'll have a rock from Crazy Horse. You know, how cool is that? So then I was like, whenever else we'd go to other places, I would look for a rock to take. Like we went to St. Petersburg in Russia, and there was these cobblestones in the square, and so I took one of those. So
are you supposed to take those?
I don't think you're supposed to take
them. Did you just decide?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what it shows
up. It doesn't sound like something you're supposed to take.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how what it shows up like on the security in my luggage. That's why I keep getting stopped. And so like when I went to Prague, we went to Krakow in Poland. I went to Prague last year. So I took a couple of rocks from there. But the problem is, and then we went to Sedona, and I took some of the red rocks. We went to see the red rocks in Sedona. But now the problem is,
see, I feel now that you are definitely overstepping what's allowed, because a lot of these places probably even have a sign saying, please do not disturb the area.
Well, you know what's funny?
You're like filling your pockets with rocks.
Well, you know what's so funny? So like in Poland, I took some of, because my mom is Polish, and so I took some of the soil from Krakow, you know, and mm-hmm. I put it in a bag, and I brought it home with me, and I put it in this little bottle next to one of my mom's pictures. Well, then I was thinking, you know, when you leave a country, a foreign country, they give you that. Remember that sheet that they give you, and they ask you, like, do you have any?
Yeah.
And they even ask you, do you have any soil?
Oh, did they really when you left there?
Well, yeah, it always says that. Like, are you bringing in any kind of vegetables?
Yeah.
Any soil? Right. And I didn't even think about it, you know, because I had forgotten. And then I got home and I'm like, right. Oh, I brought soil back. I wonder if I brought, you know, like cow and mouth disease back. Or what is that?
Now we're all going to get those crazy Japanese tree beetles because of you. That's what happened. You bring back stuff that, like, killed our environment.
That's why all my trees in my neighborhood are dying.
Yeah, right?
But, you know, my point is, so now I've got this nice little collection of rocks that we have in the backyard from all these places, but I've forgotten now where each one's from. Because I should have written on the bottom, you know, Russia or, but I didn't want to ruin the rock, but then now I don't remember. I mean, I remember a few of them, but I don't remember all of them. And so I'm saying, this way for posterity, so James will know where you got that, that smiley mug. You can put my name on there. So here's the thing, what I wanted to talk about to you today, we were talking a few weeks ago about the television reboots and the reunions, and there's Will and Grace, and there's Roseanne, and there's Dynasty this year, and there's going to be, and they, you know, they've done Arrested Development, and there's a lot of shows that, you know, they had Fuller House, you know, take off on Full House and all that, and so it seems as if we're kind of in a little creative rut, at least as far as the networks go. They're looking to compete with some of the more challenging TV shows on some of the streaming services and things. And so they're going for the most popular things, Will and Grace, reboot coming back, and all this stuff. And so I've been watching. Now, have you been watching Twin Peaks?
Well, you know, I have been watching it, but I'm only on, like, episode 13.
Oh!
Because after the big birth of Bob or whatever that episode was, you know the one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It just got really out there.
Yeah, with the whole, with the nuclear bomb and all that. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. This is my interpretation was that was ultimately telling us that was where this evil force of Bob was born.
Right, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But that slowed me down quite a bit. I think it took me like 3 weeks to.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you.
You know, right. So see, you can't. So I'm now, like, I think there are 18 episodes, but I think I just finished episode 13.
Well,
I still have a few left, even though the last one has aired already.
Right. Well, here's my question, though. And I forgot, too. I just saw a couple weeks ago, Seth Meyers is going to be producing a new version of The Munsters.
Yes, and you know who he's working with? He's working with a woman named Jill Cardman, who is on a show, created a show on Bravo called Odd Mom Out, and she also stars in it, and it's hilarious. If you don't watch it, you should definitely watch it. So when I read that she was involved in this Munsters reboot, I decided this is actually going
to
be great.
You know, but my point is, up to this point now, there have been four versions. There will now be at least four versions of the Munsters. There was the original. There was one in the 80s, which was awful, with
mm-hmm.
John Shuck. And then there was one a few years ago with Jerry McConnell. Or is it O'Connell?
Jerry? I don't even remember that one.
Yeah.
Jerry O'Connell,
where it was supposedly going to be not a comedy per se. They did a pilot, and then they shucked it because it was so bad. But, like, Jerry was Herman Munster, but he wasn't dressed up like Frankenstein. It was ridiculous.
Well, that's the whole point.
And then there was
so this new version. I read this one is going to take place in Brooklyn, and it will follow how they fit in with the hipsters, which I think you will actually appreciate.
No, I can understand that, but I'm just saying is how many times are you going to keep going back to the well for this? So, but here's my question to your point about the Twin Peaks thing, because the Twin Peaks, you know, series here has been very challenging, very frustrating. It's been entertaining if you like David Lynch, and don't get me wrong, I'm a huge David Lynch fan, and I have been for more than 30 years. I first became aware of him when he directed The Elephant Man, which is a great film. And then I discovered Eraserhead, and that's a very weird and avant-garde film. But then, of course, he came to real prominence in the mid-'80s with Blue Velvet. But he has always been a very challenging and kind of out there guy. Ultimately, he really is an avant-garde performance artist who uses film as his medium. He's not really a storyteller because most of his movies do not tell a linear story. They are mostly, there's a very thin storyline, but it's mostly about images and feel and emotion and sound and mood. And there's very little logic. There's a very thin thread of a story. But you know that going in.
Twin Peaks, the original Twin Peaks probably being the exception. You know, that was probably his one piece of work that has the most coherent plot.
Yes. And
that you need to follow.
Yeah, you're exactly correct. But here's the thing. I think only that, and the reason for that was because he was under the umbrella of network television, which demanded a more mainstream and more clearer narrative than a movie would.
Mm-hmm.
And then when ABC demanded that he solve the Laura Palmer murder, he got disillusioned with the show and left it. So, you know, you're exactly correct. Twin Peaks was probably his most, strongest narrative. But then when he was pressured to follow that, he couldn't do it. I think he must have ADD. You know, he has no intent. He has no attention span. He gets bored with normalcy. And that's fine. I have no problem with that. He's an artist. He's an auteur. I get it. And if I go see a David Lynch movie, I expect that. What has been very frustrating to me, and believe me, nobody has been more excited than me when they announced the Twin Peaks, reboot. I mean, I told you, I've showed a picture on this podcast, on the actual podcast link, of my Twin Peaks license plates. Okay, yeah. I'm all in. The first episode, my wife went out. She was excited. You know, she went out and bought cherry pie. I mean, we were all in, and she lost a lot of interest as this show kept going on.
Yeah, you just that episode really.
Yeah.
I lost a little steam, but I did go back to it.
But here's
I will finish it.
Well, here's my point. So, what I wonder when we so this show and the thing that's been so frustrating about it is, at least in my view. I mean, I've seen reviews of this now, and especially after the finale has appeared. And those who are huge David Lynch fans or who appreciate, the challenge, they're lauding this show, and they're finding ways to spin it, even though I really think that it's been a little disappointing in that it really isn't Twin Peaks. It's not it there. I think if you took out of these 18 hours, if you took the time that this show, these 18 hours focused on the characters and the storyline of the real Twin Peaks, I bet you wouldn't be more than 5 hours.
Yes. Well, no, because they've got this whole plot line happening in Nevada.
There's a million plot lines.
Then there's another one. No, then there's that other one. See, now I'm at the point where, there's this other one with the murders in, where was that? South Dakota or something?
Yeah.
Montana,
yeah.
Wyoming.
Oh, yeah. That's,
it's been like five episodes since they've even gone back to
that's what I mean.
Okay.
There's so much,
Yeah,
and so that's what's been very frustrating to me. I don't, and believe me, those have been interesting, small, little vignettes. They've been very violent, which is very surprising because that is, once again, to your point earlier, that is not what Twin Peaks was. Even though it surrounded a murder, it was not overtly gruesome and bloody and violent.
No.
But Twin Peaks, David Lynch films have been, especially over the last several years. And so what's been very frustrating to me, and this is kind of, I guess, my own dark side here. I really believe that, because, if you remember, they announced that Twin Peaks is coming back and it's supposed to be 10 episodes. And then all of a sudden, within 4 months, David Lynch said, I quit. And apparently he quit because he wanted to do 18 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want to do that. But then they saw the buzz that this was creating for Showtime with just the mere announcement.
Yeah.
So then they gave in. Now think about this. So I think what David Lynch did, which I think was very shrewd, and I don't blame him. He's an artist. He's in his 70s. Who knows how many times he has a chance to do this. But I really think that he used the Twin Peaks umbrella to get this, and then he incorporated all different ideas and thoughts and little ideas and maybe storylines for movies that he never made, and he incorporated them all and tried to loosely tie them together under the Twin Peaks umbrella. And that's what I don't appreciate. You know, but think about this.
See, you're not filling me with confidence for the finale.
Well, no, there's moments, but my point is, even where you're at, the whole idea of this is Agent Cooper. And we still haven't seen the real Agent Cooper yet.
Right. Agent Cooper is like something, you know, he's not even himself.
No, and that's what's...
I don't even know what's happening.
No, that's what I'm saying. And so I just think that David Lynch, I mean, think about this. How many directors, movie director, any kind of director, think about what David Lynch was given by Showtime. 18 hours of freedom. I mean, Martin Scorsese has never been given 18 hours just to indulge whatever he wants. You know what I mean? So he was given 18 hours. And maybe Twin Peaks itself can't even withstand 18 hours of storytelling. Maybe it doesn't. I mean, I'm not saying in the bad way. I'm just saying, I mean, you know, let's be honest. But I just feel that there's been so many side stories and sidetracks. And within those side stories, there have been very interesting moments and visuals and funny, quirky things that are David Lynchian. But they're not necessarily Twin Peaks. And that's what really disappoints me. And I won't get into the finale because you haven't seen it. But I will just say that when all is said and done, you know, this was not Twin Peaks. This was David Lynch. This was a magnum opus of everything David Lynch. And you see, you know, hints of Mulholland Drive and Lost Highway and Wild at Heart and Blue Velvet. It's all there. To me, this is almost like, you know, he's in his 70s. This might be like one big giant career retrospective. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of his whole career. But the only way he could make this was to take it under the Twin Peaks banner, because no one's going to give him that much money and that much time to do that. And that's what disappointed me, because there are so many rich characters in Twin Peaks. That's what made it. And yes, it was quirky. And yes, it didn't follow the normal, you know, things of storytelling, which was what made it interesting for network television. The irony is, I think David Lynch does need an editor. He does need somebody. Yeah. If you let him go, you get that one episode you talked about where it's like, what? There's nuclear bombs and there's just smoke for 25 minutes and electricity. And you're like, what is going on here? And why am I watching this?
Somehow a beetle crawls into a girl's mouth and then that's it.
And we have never seen up to that point, I'm not going to try to ruin anything for you, but you know, you're waiting. You heard that Sherilyn Fenn, Audrey Horn, who was a major character, you know, the vixen in Twin Peaks. You haven't even seen her yet, right?
I have seen her, but only in like a 5 minute.
Yeah.
So in the episode I watched, I think it was one or two episodes ago, that is where Audrey Horn comes back. And the crazy thing is, it's so anticlimactic. I mean, you this is Audrey Horn, and you've been waiting several episodes into this now to see her. And then they basically just go from one scene to like casually to another scene, and there's Audrey Horn talking to her husband.
And all she's doing, and in that scene, all she's doing is yelling and crying and saying the F word.
And talking about people that you don't even know who they are.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the crazy thing, too. She's talking about all these people as if they're like you know, important yeah. people. Like you're thinking, oh, I know. These are gonna be, and who knows? I don't know. I still have a few episodes.
There are so many.
Out, but it probably won't.
Yeah, there are so many rich characters. There's obviously the hovering. You know, who killed Laura Palmer remains at the heart of this. But, you know, Agent Cooper is not Agent Cooper. Audrey has been a sideline at best. You know, Hawk mm-hmm. is nothing. They didn't even have the original Harry Truman. You know, they've got his brother. They didn't have Michael Ontkean, you know, to bring back Harry, who was a major character. They didn't bring back Joan Chen, who was a major character. You know, some people have died, obviously. Some of the most compelling scenes have been with the Log Lady, and I know she was very sick, but those, at least, they did explore to some extent. But, you know, Dr. Jacoby was a really cool character, not doing anything. You know,
right. He's in this one. He's
yeah,
in this
he's
one.
In it,
he
but he's not
yeah,
Dr.
Jacoby. What he's doing.
Yeah, that's my point. And so it just seems like they used the Twin Peaks, you know, background in order to get the freedom to make this big thing and just indulge in all these other kinds of things, which is fine from a David Lynch standpoint, but is to me really diluting and, you know, almost corrupting the Twin Peaks story and franchise. So here's my question to you then, as we kind of wrap this up here. When you see a, you know, we are going to be in, and if this Will and Grace thing, for instance, becomes a hit,
mm-hmm.
then the floodgates will open and
yeah.
the networks will just go back and get any show from the 80s and 90s and bring it back. As long as as I said before, as long as everybody is still skinny.
Before you know it, Urkel will be back.
Yeah. Oh, that's not even a question. Yeah. Anything that was on a Friday night
yeah.
on ABC will come back, believe me. But here's my point. When you look at a show like, say, looks like Will and Grace, for all intents and purposes, is going to be a very similar to the original. As Entertainment Weekly said on its cover a few weeks ago, it's even funnier and even gayer than ever.
Oh. Right.
But here's my question. When you're watching a reboot, now when you see one that will probably follow the way you'd expect it, like a Will and Grace or a Twin mm-hmm. Peaks, which is completely redefining what the original was, what do we want from? Do we want to be challenged? Do we want something different? Or do we just want the warm and fuzzy of...
Well, yeah. I mean, I've thought about this. I think it sort of depends on what type of show it is. You know, I think with the sitcom, a traditional sitcom like Will and Grace, or even you mentioned Full House came back as Fuller House, you know, and all those characters returned, and they're really all, you know, time has moved on for them, but it's the same basic premise, you know. With shows like that, I think the general premise of the show to begin with was not that complicated, so I think it makes it easy for them to pick up where these characters left off. I think that's what the audience wants. They want that comfort zone. That's what part of what we loved about those shows back then, you know. But with a show like Twin Peaks or even The X-Files, which has been back for a handful of episodes, and I heard they're coming back for another handful of episodes, you know, there I think there's way more scope to do something really different or to change things up a bit. But I think with Twin Peaks, this is like to the extreme, you know.
Because yeah,
there is an element of Twin Peaks that there's also a comfort zone there in the actual town of Twin Peaks. You know, you want to see the lodge and you want to see the double D diner or whatever it is, you know, the double R diner. And you want to see all that, the double D diner.
Right.
Whoops, Freudian slip. So you want to see all that stuff. But and so now David Lynch has taken this to such an extreme that you go, I barely even when they're in Twin Peaks, I don't get that same feeling.
No,
you know,
Well, what's interesting is, you know, what I've discovered when I'm watching, and I've watched all like 18 episodes, is really if you look at this version, even though it's gone off the rails in many different ways, but it is more in tone and scope and mood and feeling, more like the later movie Twin Peaks, Fire Walk With Me, which was much darker and much more violent and much more graphic and much more even obtuse and vague in many ways than the TV show was. And it seems like that was, once again, without the ABC network forcing traditionalism on David Lynch, this is what I think Fire Walk With Me, which sort of did was a prequel to the TV show, was more violent and dark and sinister, and that's where this one is going. So I wonder if not for the ABC mainstream dictums, I wonder if the Twin Peaks that we came to know and love initially ever would have even existed, because he was forced to get to focus and be more linear in his storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think Mark Frost comes from, who co-created and co-wrote this with David Lynch, because he came from a TV tradition. He worked on Hill Street Blues. So he was more involved in regular television, and I think maybe he helped rein in David Lynch. But when he's left to his own devices, he's way, way out there. And he may be bold and adventurous and original, but he's not, you know, a storyteller in the conventional sense of the word, as I said, which is great. But don't do that to Twin Peaks. And the thing is that everybody's saying, well, is Twin Peaks going to continue? And it conceivably can. And that's what makes me mad, because I would be compelled to watch it again.
Of course you would.
But I would still be, and I know I would be frustrated again and be saying these same things, but I would have to watch it.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, you can't help yourself.
Yeah,
I would have to watch it too, I admit.
Yeah.
And I still have to see what happens at the end of this.
Well, I don't want to keep belaboring the point here, but you and I maybe may need to talk about this offline, because I would like to get, when you finally watch them all, let me know. And I would like to get your impressions.
Yeah, we'll have to compare notes.
Yeah, when you
sure.
see it all. But because, a few years ago, TNT did a reboot of Dallas, and they combined some new characters with some of the old characters like Bobby Ewing and, those that were alive were on there. Mm-hmm. And it was okay. It wasn't great. But I thought they at least did a nice job to what you were saying. Because there's a show that's not a comedy. That was a drama and kind of a soap opera. But they did a fairly good job of paying homage to the past with those characters and those characters acting like you would expect them to act. And then there was a new generation and how the two generations clashed. And so it was interesting the way they did it. It wasn't great, but it wasn't terrible. And so there really is kind of a thin line, but as all these new reboots and sequels begin, which I think is going to happen in earnest over the next 3 or 4 years, I really think you're going to see just a ton of, they're going to be raiding the vaults, and whatever you see on on TV land is going to be a new show again. And believe me, they're going to find a way. If Betty White is still alive, they're going to find a way to bring Golden Girls back too, even though she's the only one that's still alive. But I think they really have to be careful, because it gets very thin if the show just comes back after the first episode and it's cool to see everybody. Oh, isn't this great? And then you need a story. You need something to keep
exactly.
it going. So I think The Will and Grace is going to be a very important success or failure rate. If that one hits, oh my gosh, get ready.
Right.
Yeah, there is going to be no show that will not be rebooted. And so what would be, like, from, I'm trying to think, because you're right in that sweet spot, your age. So I would think it's like what shows would you see coming back? Like, what were some of your popular...
Well, I don't know what would come back. I mean, I think people kind of in my demographic would probably love to see Friends come back, but that's never going to happen. And probably even Seinfeld, that's never going to happen.
Seinfeld, no. Yeah,
that's... I mean, that's a really tough one. What has left that I want to come back that even would come back? I don't know. I mean, Will and Grace, that's a good one. That was very big.
Did you like Mad About You?
I don't know if I would care if that came back, to be honest. I did like Mad About You, but I think I watched Mad About You because it was like, it was a lead into, I don't even remember if it was on before Seinfeld
right.
or something
yeah,
else. Something else came on right after Mad About You.
Yeah.
And so I would watch it, and I liked it. It was funny, but I don't think I cared enough about it to really want to see it come back.
Well, like
oh,
I said.
The Niner.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Beverly Hills 90210. That's got to come back.
That did come back. You know, the thing is, that did come back. when I was living over in London, it came back, and we did get some episodes over there. But this was basically like a new generation.
Yeah, no, they would need to bring.
I want to see them come back. I want to see Kelly Taylor,
right,
and Brandon Walsh, and with Donna Martin.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Would definitely tune in for that one.
That one, and then Melrose Place too.
But see, at this point, yeah, so this is like, Melrose Place, maybe. I wasn't as invested in that. But again, that was like a 1-2. You'd watch The Niner and then Melrose.
Right.
Like back to back.
Yeah, I bet you those two.
I think if they brought that back, although it would be like The Niner, like the middle aged years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It would just be like.
I guarantee you, Luke Perry is just waiting.
Well, Luke Perry is on a show right now that's doing pretty well. It's called Riverdale.
Yeah,
he basically plays a dad now. He's like a dad.
Yeah, he plays. That's the takeoff on the Archie's cartoon.
Yes, exactly. But this is like the new, this is for like for younger people. There's a show I watch, which I'm sure that you would love. It's called Pretty Little Liars. It's right up your alley, Jim.
Oh, I've seen the. Oh my God!
And this show just finished. Okay, they just finished their last season, but this followed five teenage high school girls who were involved in this murder mystery, and it kind of has a dark side, but it's still it was on ABC Family, so it was still pretty wholesome.
Right.
And I used to like watching for the fashion because the girls were all very fashionable, and I got really hooked on the show.
Nice.
And so now, but here's the funny thing though, one of the dads on the show, Chad Lowe.
Oh,
right? Remember Chad Lowe?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. One of the moms from the show. She was one of the sisters on Charmed. She was the daughter, the teenager on Picket Fences, right? When I was a teenager.
Right.
So now the people who are our age, my age, they're playing the parents.
Oh, right.
On these shows where the teenagers are the main characters.
Yeah.
But the Luke Perrys and the Chad Lowe's are playing the dads.
Yeah, but I guarantee you,
he would go back.
Yeah, if he had the choice, Luke Perry would run back in a second. He would get rid of.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. So. Well, we shall see.
Tori Spelling would be the first one sprinting back, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
She's got all kinds of financial.
She's got a lot,
now,
yeah.
Ironically,
which is
considering her father had more money than anyone on the planet.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah, no. I heard about her financial problems. That is unbelievable. But well, we shall see.
We can hope for a Niner reboot.
Well, you could.
That's my wish. Yeah, that's my birthday wish.
Wow, that's pretty sad. But,
I hope someone out there at Spelling Entertainment hopefully is listening to this. And they're going into their next pitch meeting with this.
Well, like I said. You see, if Will and Grace does well, that will be the touchstone for all these other ones to come back. So anyway, well, thank you so much. I'm glad you liked your flowers, and we will talk Twin Peaks and other stuff as we continue with the Pop Culture Club. And thank you once again, Emily Arminetti.
Thanks, Jim.
All right. Take care. And that music means that we are done for another episode, number 69 here. Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Thank you so much. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. I had a good time. I hope you did too. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGMplus.com. I'm Elton Jim. This has been Captain Podtastic. From the end of the web to your screens.